We're back on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis, and I want to thank all our listeners and also our hosts for this whole group of segments. It's For the Record. That means it's our Radio Entrepreneurs legal show. That means I'm being hosted by the law firm of Tarlow, Breed, Hart, and Rogers, and my co-host is Mark Furman from the law firm.
Jeffrey, great to be with you.
Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it. We appreciate the hospitality of your law firm and also from Mark Z Legal Staffing, who also helps sponsor the show. Our next guest is Paul Holtzman from Crokidis.
Crokidis
sounds Greek.
It is.
Crokidis and Bluestein. And we're going to talk about pay equity, Pregnant Workers Act, and I think a little bit about Harvey Weinstein, correct?
Rather timely and important for businesses to think about what it's far away in the West Coast, but it's going to have a lot of ripple effects here, I think.
Why don't we start by just getting a little bit of your background?
Sure. So I've been practicing since 1987. I do predominantly employment law, both sides, on behalf of employees as well as employers, and that includes both discrimination cases as well as a lot of wage and hour work. In the last 5 or 6 years now, I've started to work a lot as a neutral, so I work as a mediator to assist other lawyers in resolving cases, particularly employment cases, and I've also recently joined the American Arbitration Association panel, employment law panel for arbitrators, so I'm doing work as a neutral, as both as an arbitrator and as a mediator. And in employment law, a lot of the work is preventive, so we do a lot of trainings. We help companies put together handbooks and policies. And relevant to Mr. Weinstein and what's going on with Miramax, we also do a lot of internal investigations. So when cases, issues come up, complaints, whether it's discrimination or harassment or unequal pay, we'll often come in as an outside investigator to help the company get the facts and to decide what to do with those facts once they nail them down. That's my background. I've been with Crokidis and Bluestein for about 25, 26 years, and the firm does a lot of work, including general litigation, a lot of work with nonprofits and the human service sector, a lot of work with small businesses as well, both corporate and litigation work.
Wow. Well, you know, why don't we start with the most topical subject, and then we'll get into more substantive issues.
Sure.
The whole Harvey Weinstein sexual harassment, thing, because you know this is probably, you know, I always believe this is like that, what they say, the duck that looks calm above the water and under the water, the feet are sort of flapping away.
Exactly.
How many thousands of Harvey Weinsteins are out there in the world that are still thinking today,
right,
I'm safe?
Right. And this is a question that came up after the Anita Hill hearings with the allegations against Clarence Thomas when he was up for the Supreme Court nomination, and sort of surfaced these discussions about sexual harassment in the workplace. What we're seeing with Weinstein is a pattern. I think his conduct is probably off the charts in terms of the severity and the repetition and the pervasiveness of what he was doing. But as you say, I think there are a lot of sort of lower order cases of a similar nature that are out there. And this has to do with power, it has to do with a lack of accountability, and particularly it has to do with a lack of leadership from whether it's a board or ownership of a company. What happened here, we're now learning, is that there were many warning signs, and they were rather blatant. Once a company has paid out a number of settlements of the magnitude that we're talking about here, there's no question they were on notice. They knew what was going on. Their decision was a fateful one, and I think a short-sighted one, which was to try to sweep it under the rug, hope it wouldn't happen again. If it did, we'll just pay off the next one. The problem with that is that the company is gonna take the hit. They're gonna be responsible for the next case and the next case, and now I think we're gonna see dozens of allegations against Weinstein and against the company for his failure to address it and to stop it. And that's really the basics of the law here, right? Once a manager, a supervisor, an owner, a board member learns of this kind of conduct, their obligation is very clear. They have to investigate it, they have to determine the facts, and if they find there's something there, they need to take sufficient action to stop it, to make sure it doesn't recur. And paying off one after another, and winking and nodding and letting the conduct continue, and sending the signal to Weinstein that we're not going to do anything about it, that's where they get in trouble as a company. And that's what we see a lot.
You know, I'm not, you know, I'm a management consultant, I'm not an attorney like you and Mark, but, you know, Weinstein, it's funny, he's moved quickly. I think he probably has good crisis PR firm. He says he's in therapy, he need forgiveness, statute of limitations. I mean, it looks like he's trying to position himself for, you know, safety and reemergence.
Well, he's got a couple of concerns, right? He's got potential criminal exposure, which is what I think he's trying to address in some level by saying that he's remorseful and he's going to get treatment. but these.
And everything was consensual, and everything, I think his lawyers, or whoever issued the statement.
Exactly, I think they're planting that seed, and they're hoping that that's the message, but I think the more facts that we see, and this is where you have to do the investigations to find out, right? I mean, sometimes there are allegations, and it turns out it was consensual, or it didn't happen the way the allegation describes it. But once you have this kind of pattern, and if you don't do the investigation, if instead your decision is, let's just keep it at a distance, we won't look too closely at it, we'll pay her off, she'll leave, she'll sign the confidentiality clause. This is the other thing we're seeing with Miramax. They have some very strict non-disclosure agreements that every employee signed. The Trump Organization has the same thing. And it's a way of tamping down rumors but as we see here, also preventing the disclosure of significant issues which could bet the company sort of losses if they don't get addressed. So when you talk about he's got his PR and he's going to get rehabilitation, that's not going to help the company, because the company as his employer is going to be liable for the damages incurred by each of these women, whether they were employees, applicants, stars in some movie or whatever. He is acting as an agent of the company, harassing them sometimes. We don't know the extent of it, but there are going to be significant damages that would accrue, and the company's going to be on the hook for
it. So strict liability for supervisor misconduct?
Exactly, right. So he's the top of the company, and again, you know, independent board would have made a difference here. It sounds like the board was some family members, some friends. They made the decision to...
Like most boards.
Well, this is true, and you know, you got a creative genius, and they're weighing the pros and cons, and he's bringing in the money, and he's putting out great movies. On the other hand, this is a ticking time bomb that's going underneath the surface, and their decision to tamp it down and hope it goes away, as I say, was a fateful one and a bad one, and the lesson is there for a lot of companies, I think, to think about making that decision in a different way, getting to the facts, taking some remedial measures. But here, you know, they had, right?
I walk from company to company every day in a different role than you do. I see the companies from the inside,
right,
as a consultant. And, there's so many people who have been mistreated in companies across the country, and they have no recourse like these people have. These are famous people with money who have recourse and have the strength, and it's a different type of board. It is a stronger board than a lot of other boards. I just think about the other victims who are out there, and is there ever really a way to protect people from, the unjust behavior of people in power?
Right. So this is the distinction I draw. There's a lot of mistreatment by people who are powerful, some arbitrary decision-making, unfair treatment. I'll put that to the side, but when you cross the line on the unfair treatment and the decision-making is motivated by gender, by sexuality, race, color, then you're into discrimination territory. So that the fact that somebody is dismissed without a reason and in an arbitrary manner isn't going to give you legal exposure. If, on the other hand, somebody is dismissed because they rejected a sexual advance, for example, or complained about an advance, and the company sided with the harasser, and then they fire the accuser, that's where you're looking at real liability. So I think there are rights out there. The MCAD takes these things very seriously. There are lots of lawyers out there who, with facts one-tenth as serious as what we're seeing in the Miramax situation, would be happy to take these cases on, often on a contingent fee basis. So there's, as a victim, sometimes you don't even need to put up the funds to litigate. But it depends on the facts, and it depends on how the company responded. Because obviously these things happen out there at different levels of orders of magnitude, right? There are offhand comments, there are touches, there are jokes. But I think in most companies, the real offenders are known, right? The rumors are out there. It happens time after time. Comments are made. And again, the instinct often is, let's sweep it under the rug, hope it goes away, and that's what costs the company money down the road. Because if they could have nipped it in the bud, some training, a warning, this is your last chance, if it happens again, you're fired, you're demoted, and showing that you respect the victims and that you're going to take their, take them at the word if it's true, that's the message.
But if the leading person has power and they're both a rainmaker and fame maker,
yeah, well, this is the
it's
thing.
Very hard for boards to want to take them down because they're riding on the coattails as well.
Absolutely. And, Bill Cosby was the ultimate rainmaker and fame maker as well. I don't know what the production companies there knew and the rest, but I think it's another a tale that gives some important lessons about the abuse of power, particularly as it relates to gender equality and the license that certain powerful men take due to their position, to the detriment of women, and that has a career impact on women, obviously, if they can't be equal in the workplace and be judged on their merits, if they're subject to casting couch behavior, that's a clear hurdle that men aren't facing.
Well, just to move that to the other side of the coin, you've done work with the whole area of women who are pregnant and work.
Right.
And that's another area where I think we needed more clarity.
Well, this is true, and this is interesting. So Governor Baker this past summer signed a new law that's taking effect next July in Massachusetts called the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. And it builds on existing law, which everybody knows you can't fire somebody because they're pregnant. But this goes further and requires certain accommodations for pregnant employees, whether it's a meal break or a rest break, or even after delivery, time to express milk for breastfeeding parents. And these are new protections unique to Massachusetts going into effect next March for every employer who has six or more employees. And it's worth taking a look at because there are new policies that are going to need to be put in place. A lot of companies have handbooks. They tend to sit on the shelf, gather dust. These sorts of changes require you take them off the shelf and update them, because if you don't, you're going to be looking at liability the first time that you're confronted with one of these requests and you reject it, not knowing that the law has changed. So that's one important change coming down the pipe. Another one is affects every employer, no matter what size. You don't have to have six employees for this other statute, new statute to apply, and it's called a pay equity statute, and it's again designed to promote equal opportunity in the workplace for women, and it does a couple of things. It prohibits, well, first of all, it requires that you pay equal pay for comparable work. And this has been a long battle in Massachusetts and elsewhere, but this statute defines it and says if you've got work that similarly requires similar skills and responsibility, performed under similar conditions, you've got to pay the same as you do for a man. But it also has a very specific practical prohibition that a lot of people are going to get tripped up by, which is you may no longer, as of March when this goes into effect, inquire about the prior salary history of applicants. Because what the social science has found is that women traditionally, historically, have been paid less for the same jobs. And by inquiring about their salary history, that perpetuates that discrimination. So this statute says you can't ask what you earned at your last job. You've got to set the market, set the price based on the market without inquiring. And I think that, again, as we get closer to March, and companies are going to have to be, July in this case, July 1st takes effect, companies need to be thinking about how to implement that new law and update their policies as well. So two things that companies are doing.
Most of the laws that are written around the protection of women?
Well, not these two happen to be, and I think that this is reflective of trend of increased attention to these issues. And these are both broadly about expanding opportunity in the workplace and making sure that women don't have these extra hurdles, and to accommodate what are unique things about women in the workplace is they're going to get pregnant, they're going to have babies, and they want to stay in the workplace. It's going to require something different. They might need a 30-minute rest break while they're pregnant instead of a 15-minute rest break. What this statute says is unless you can show there's an undue hardship to you as the employer, you got to give that. They may need time to express breast milk because they're breastfeeding their newborn. Something that's not a request you're ever going to get from a male employee. So you'd say, well, I don't do that for the men. I can't do it for the women. This law makes it very clear that you have to do it. That it's a required.
That we're different.
We're different. That you have to recognize those differences. And if you want to achieve equality in the workplace, you have to recognize that there are differences that need to be addressed and accommodated. That's the premise of these laws.
What's the current law relating to maternity leave, and what is there anything out there that relates to paternity leave?
So there is a unpaid parental leave. So Massachusetts has a Maternity Leave Act, which is gender neutral, or a Parental Leave Act, which is gender neutral. Now it's unpaid leave, and there's certain triggers. You have to be at a company for a certain number of weeks or months before you're eligible. And that's a Massachusetts specific requirement. There's nothing on the national level that requires maternity leave or paternity leave. Massachusetts wrestled for a long time with an archaic statute, as it were, that spoke only about women as new parents. This new statute addresses that and resolves what had been a dispute about whether it was a discrimination to draw that distinction. So there are all sorts of rules. It's a very complicated area, actually, for businesses to think about how long somebody should stay out, whether to make it paid or unpaid, If they're, both parents are in the workplace, how do you deal with that in the same workplace? But yeah, Massachusetts is, has a specific statute.
Wow, great listening to you, Paul.
Pleasure.
Have you come back again and talk about these subjects. You've had my mind racing the whole time. So many questions I didn't want to dominate. Just so many implications even of these new laws as they start to play their way out. If someone wants to find you, Paul, at
Crokidis
and Bluestein. I lived in Greece. I should be. Greek names usually are easy for me. How would they find you?
So the easiest is our website, which is www.kb-law.com, kb-law.com, or 617-482-7211, or the email is pholtzman@kb-law.com.
Wow. Thanks for being on the show today.
It's a pleasure. Nice to talk to you both.
That was great.
And thank you, Mark Furman, from our sponsoring law firm, TBHR, Tarlow, Breed, Hart & Rogers. For the record, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages.